So, boys and girls, I'm recording this after I've had a couple of rums. So, yeah, it's Saturday night, and I thought, you know what? It's Saturday night. So, I've had a couple of rums. Now, here's the deal. I have recorded this episode over a couple of evenings. Sometimes I do that. That's one of the crazy cool things I do. And you have to try and figure out which sections I recorded after I'd had a couple of rums, and which ones I recorded stone cold sober. Yeah. Let's do that, shall we? Okay, run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me, my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to episode... Ooh, I should know the answer, but I don't. Of A Christmas Carol. This isn't A Christmas Carol, is it? Oh, of the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. How have you been? Oh, this is the interactive bit. We're doing it now. How have you been? I had two, but they were quite large ones. Yeah, with Dr. Pepper. No, I haven't got a problem. Well, I've got a problem, actually. It's a bit late, and I shouldn't have been drinking the Dr. Pepper, because I'm worried the caffeine's going to keep me up. Yeah, well, I didn't think of that, did I? Fine. No, that's fine. And scene. Okay, so I've got a packed show, as usual. I say that, I don't know. It might not be packed. It might be empty. We'll see what happens, shall we? Yeah, let's just do that. We'll do that now. We're starting the show right now.
This is the Total Christmas Podcast. Listen up, Jackass.
Did you hear that? Sorry, let me ask you again. Did you hear that? Huh? Yeah, that was sent in by Travis, because my advice on Jack Ask is so good, he sent me through a jingle for the segment. And I love it. That is a thing of beauty. He's actually added a touch of class to my otherwise squalid show. So thank you so much for sending that through, Travis. Yeah, now I'd already recorded this segment when I got that sent through. So now I'm just going to go straight in to the segment. But before I do, let me just say it again. Travis, fantastic work. Fantastic work. Right, let's answer the next question. This is the second question from Travis. Now, if you're at home thinking, do you know what? This is some of the best advice I've ever received. Then maybe, just maybe, you should send in your questions to me and I can sort them out for you to make sure that your Christmas runs smoothly. So this is the question we've received from Travis. This is the second question we've received. And when I say we, I mean me, I. This is the second question. Can we just ask the question? This is the question. Dear Jack. Okay, it doesn't say Dear Jack, but I thought I'd add that to make it sound more like a advice column. Okay. It just says number two, because it's the second one of his questions. Dear Jack, all right? I'm just saying Dear Jack. Dear Jack. Are bonfires in the evening or afternoon at Christmas time a good idea? I think it's nice to be out in the snow, but my mother would argue that when all the aunts and uncles have a few drinks, it's too dangerous to have a bonfire. Well, this is a simple one, isn't it? The aunties and uncles, they're grown adults. If they want to go around kicking a fire, throwing petrol on it, scorching their eyebrows, let them do it. It's their decision. If they want to get drunk, that's their decision. You can do it. Here's the thing, right? I've never had a bonfire on Christmas Day. We do have a fire in the fireplace. I always go to my mum and dad's on Christmas Day, and we have the fire in the fireplace. My dad always gets it going. It's really nice. It's like the one time a year I'm there when there's an indoor fire, because they don't often have an open fire, but they do on Christmas Day. It's glorious. I love it. So yeah, that's the closest I've been to a bonfire. I'm guessing where Travis is from, which is Canada, I'm guessing it's more of a tradition to go out and have a bonfire. And like I said, if you want to have a bonfire, you have a bonfire. Okay, don't chuck loads of tyres on it and stuff like that, okay? We're not trying to annoy the neighbours. But if you want to have a bonfire and you want to get your aunts and uncles, throw them on it. I'd advise against it, But again, if your aunts and uncles have had a few shandies and they want to have a drink and they want to enjoy the bonfire and they want to roast some marshmallows, let the Fraggles play. That's what I say. And tell your mum, okay, just to relax. Tell her to have a couple of rums, maybe with Dr. Pepper. That's her choice. Enjoy your Christmas. There you go. That was an easy one. I dealt with that. If you've got a question that needs resolving, then I'm your man. Send it in to JackAsk or just my usual email address. I haven't got a JackAsk email, so yeah. That was easy, wasn't it? Let's do this. Oh, wow. So, boys and girls, I may not be the only one who's enjoyed a little bit of alcohol this episode, because when Bob sent this through, he attached a little note saying I recorded this after I'd spent a little bit too much time in the tiki bar. So, yeah, let's see how he sounds. And Bob, you're beautiful.
Thanks, Jack. For this episode's Christmas Every Day, I learned a little lesson about excess and extravagance. You know how at the holidays we can go to extremes with all the decorating. We make everything bigger, brighter, and overdone. Well, sometimes clean and simple can be more impactful, more meaningful in its uncluttered grace. Jennifer Kay and our pod mascot Elmer suggest that you keep up one string of white Christmas lights throughout the year. You never turn them off, but when you see them shining in the dark or in the morning when you wake up, you can't help but feel the joy of the season, no matter the time of year. And if you have another classic suggestion, you be discreet with Jack. He'll make it plain to me and will modestly share with you all next episode.
That's a nice one, isn't it? From Jenny Kay and little Elmer. Keep it subtle. One string of Christmas lights and there they are. I like that very much. Thanks again, Bob. He'll be back again in a bit. But right now, we're doing this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Here it is. Here it is. Your favourite part of the show, I say your favourite part of the show. After you've heard the questions, you might not feel that way. But, you know, give it your best shot. So, every episode, I explain to you what a quiz is in really simple details, even though you already know what a quiz is. If you normally listen to the show, you definitely know what my quiz is. If you don't normally listen to the show, you still know what a quiz is, because everyone knows what a quiz is. Quizzes. Anyway, I'm going to ask you 10 questions. Those questions are made up of words, and at the end of the words, there is a question mark. You can't see the question mark, but it will be in the intonation of my voice. Then you sit at home, or in your car, or at work, or on the bus, or on a show. I don't know where you are. I can't see you. I'm not omnipotent, but if I was, I'd know where you were. But I'm guessing. I'll take a stab. You're on the lavatory. Am I right? Okay. Right, so you're sitting there on the lavatory while I ask these 10 questions. Now, you think of the answers. Some people might make a real big deal of it and write them down. I don't think you're that kind. And then at the end, after I've asked all 10 of those questions, right, you've got the 10 answers in your brain, I'm going to give you the 10 correct answers for each one of those 10 questions. And then what you do, if the answer I give you matches the answer you've come up with, you get a point. And at the end of all 10, you add up how many points you got, and that gives you a score out of 10. Okay? It's really simple, because I go through every episode, and I'm beginning to wonder why. Right, question number one. Number one is the first of the questions. The opening lyrics of which Joni Mitchell's song are, "It's coming on Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace." Right? What is that song called? Question number two. Who had the 1975 Christmas number one single with the song, this is terrible, right? Okay, let me ask it another way. Who sung Bohemian Rhapsody? That's not Christmassy, is it? So let's just remind you that it was a Christmas number one in 1975. You want to know something interesting? It was also the Christmas number one in 1991. No, I'm going to double check that actually. Hold on. Yeah, I was right. So it was 1975 and 1991. That is the only, it's only 16 years apart. Doesn't seem that long, really, does it? It's the only song to have topped the Christmas charts twice. Well, I suppose unless you think about Band Aid, but that was a different recording. Anyway, that was question number two. Question number three is this. Who played the drums on the original Band Aid recording, Do They Know It's Christmas? Who was that? Very famous man who plays the drums. Question number four. First performed in 1956, in which stage musical is the song We Need a Little Christmas? 1956. Do you know, the only time I think I've ever heard that song or been aware of it is from A Muppet Family Christmas, you know, at the start. Well, that song is in a musical. What musical was it? Tell me, you get a point. Okay, next one. Which carol is also known in some publications as... Do you know what they've put R? Let's try that again. Which carol is also known in some publications R? Tidings of Comfort and Joy. That's not right. That doesn't work, does it? Which carol is also known in some publications as Tidings of Comfort and Joy? That's the title they've got. It's wrong. What is the correct title? Question number something. Oogie Boogie, the Bogeyman, is the main antagonist in which 1993 stop-motion animated Christmas film? Okay. Who's that? What's going on there? Okay, next one. In 1999, which American female R&B/soul singer released the album The Magic of Christmas? Do you want a clue? The clue is, I have no idea. Okay, question number... Ooh, what are we up to? Eight, is that eight? Which children's TV series had... There's a clue in the question... Which children's TV series had 2012 and 2013 episodes titled The Christmas Tree Express and Santa's Little Engine? Okay, I think you can get that even if you're not familiar with those two episodes, although some of you might watch them every year. Question number nine. A turkey, minus its legs and wings and head, of course, is called what? What do you call that turkey? What's his name? Okay, and the final one, this is a true or false one, 50-50. One of the Portuguese words for a turkey is Peru. Is that true or false? You see, because we call it turkey, right, like the country. In Portugal, they call it Peru, like the country. You tell me. I'm not telling you. Got to wait till the answer comes, okay? Right. Here come your answers. Question number one. The opening lyrics of which Joni Mitchell's song are, it's coming on Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. That song is called River. Do you know, I'll tell you a sad story about that song, right? So, I don't know how many years ago, probably about four or five maybe, Ellie Goulding, I don't know if you know Ellie Goulding, right, she's a British singer, I'm not a fan, she released a version of it. Almost identical to the original. You'd hear it on the radio thinking, oh, this is Joni Mitchell. Hang on a minute, is it Joni Mitchell? Oh, no, it's not Joni Mitchell. That's what it'd be like. And it got to number one on the UK singles chart. Now, Joni Mitchell, she never released it as a single. It was an album track from the album Blue. Okay, right. So Ellie Goulding releases her version that sounds almost exactly the same as the Joni Mitchell one, and it gets to number one. That just really annoys me. It's like, do something different with it or don't even bother. Just leave it to... Her version was no better. Definitely not better. Probably worse. In my opinion, it's much worse. I just don't like Ellie Goulding. I'm not going to go into that. That's a personal thing. But the fact that she didn't change the song, I'm just... That's it. Let's just go on to the next question. All right? Next question. Are you ready? Who had the 1975 and 1991 Christmas number one single with the song Bohemian Rhapsody? It was, of course, The Queen. As part of the Queen's speech in 1970... No, it wasn't. It was just the band Queen. Okay? The Queen herself probably... She probably sung along to it when it was on the radio. She never released it as a single. Okay. Question number three. Who played the drums on the original Band-Aid recording, Do They Know It's Christmas? That was, do you know that one? I knew it. Phil Collins. In the video, it's really cool. There's a bit where he's playing the drums and he's sort of looking up at the camera. Who cares? Question number four. First performed in 1956, in which stage musical is the song We Need a Little Christmas Right This Very Minute? Any ideas? Now, I had to look up how to pronounce this, and it didn't seem that conclusive, but I'm just going to go with MAME. It's spelled M-A-M-E. It was a stage musical, and the first production of it starred Angela Lansbury as MAME herself, and Bea Arthur from the Golden Girls. So, yeah, that was it. I didn't know that. I was only familiar with the song from Muppet Family Christmas. I mentioned that earlier. Just saying it again, aren't I? Repeating myself. Question number something. Which carol is also known in some publications as Tidings of Comfort and Joy? Well, that is, of course, God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Saviour was born on Christmas Day. Yeah, there you go. Learned something today, haven't you? Okay, next one. I won't lie to you, kids. I shortened this a bit just to make it mildly more tricky for you. The question was, Oogie Boogie, the Bogeyman, is the main antagonist in which 1993 stop-motion animated musical film created by Tim Burton. I ignored the Tim Burton bit, just to make it a little bit trickier. You would have got it anyway. It was, of course, The Nightmare Before Christmas. Question number something. In 1999, which American female R&B soul singer released the album The Magic of Christmas? That was, of course, and when I say of course, I had absolutely no idea. It was Natalie Cole. Yeah. So the next one, which children's TV series had 2012 and 2013 episodes titled The Christmas Tree Express and Santa's Little Engine? Like I said before, the clue was in the question. It was, of course, Thomas the Tank Engine. Yeah, now I know that show is global, or sort of global, so I added it in there. So if you don't watch it, I'm sure it's on some channel in your country. Question number nine. A turkey, minus its legs and wings, and head of course, is called what? Well, this one is called Jeffrey. And I won't lie to you, he's having a very hard time of it at the moment. He's been in the hospital for weeks. Now, they're trying to operate on him by reattaching his legs, but it's very difficult because he's already been cooked. It's unlikely they're going to be able to save him. Okay? So please, have Jeffrey in your thoughts and prayers. Question number... Oh, that was number nine. So this is number 10. No, sorry. The correct answer was a turkey crown, which is cheeky, really, bearing in mind it ain't got a head. And yet they're calling its, like, torso a crown. Isn't it? Bit cheeky. Cheeky to the turkey. And the final question, also about turkeys. One of the Portuguese words for a turkey is a Peru. And the answer is false, because they call it an Ecuador. That's a joke. No, it's actually true. Yeah, I said false in my little brain. I got that one wrong. Won't lie to you. But yeah, apparently in Portugal, they call a turkey a Peru. Yeah. So there we go. Do you want to know what I scored, kids? I scored 7. I got the one about the turkey wrong. I also got the crown. I knew that bit. I knew the crown's name was Jeffrey. I got the one about the Portuguese name for a turkey wrong. I got that Natalie Cole one wrong. And I also got the one wrong about the musical MAME, We Need a Little Christmas. So yeah, that was my score. I got 7 out of 10. I hope you did better than that. Or, you know, if you did do worse, I hope you don't care. That was the quiz. Yeah, now let's move on and do this. Do you ever get the feeling you're just going through the motions with these jokes? I wonder if anyone has ever A, laughed at one of my jokes, and B, shared it with other people. I just don't think it's happened. So there it is, halfway through the episode, you get this joke, everyone's like, ugh. Even me, I'm like that, ugh. I'm doing it though. Are you ready? It's not a good one. It's not. Right. What is a snowman's favourite Mexican food? Burritos. As in brrr, as in it's cold. Brrr. Burritos. Burritos. If I say it longer, does it get funnier? No. No, there's nothing that can save that joke. apart from the music that plays us out. Play the music out. So boys and girls, 2 years ago, I was sent some books by Biblioasis, and they're these lovely little books, and each one is an individual short ghost story. And the artwork, the cover, and the pictures inside have been designed by the artist Seth. And they are just delightful little books that are ideal for Christmas, especially to get the old tradition of reading scary, spooky stories at Christmas time. So last year, they offered to send me some more. I said that'd be great. A couple of months passed, they never turned up. So they said, oh, did you get the books? I said, no, I didn't. So they sent another lot. Now, I finally received the first lot in January. I'm not kidding. Do you know when she sent them? I've got the envelope here still. Right? She sent them on the 29th of September. I got them in January. The second lot, which she sent out in October, never turned up. Somebody somewhere is reading my books. Anyway, they're not my books because I am going to be giving them away to a lovely, lucky listener. Now, I'm going to read out what the stories are. So the first one is A Visit by Shirley Jackson. Margaret visits the lavish home of her friend Carla Rhodes for the holidays. But when Carla's brother arrives with a mysterious friend, strange occurrences cause tensions to rise within the group and secrets hidden within the house begin to emerge. Ooh. Next one is The Corner Shop by Lady Asquith. Peter Wood enters a charming antique shop owned by two young women one stormy evening. But after he returns a second time to a strange old man in a far gloomier atmosphere and leaves with an unusual jade frog, Peter soon discovers that his purchase is worth more than he paid. And the last one, The Dead and the Countess by Gertrude Atherton. The dead sleep peacefully until a railway is built near their cemetery. While the old priest works to keep them at rest, the Count's dying wife begs to be buried near the railway. But when her last wish is granted, the priest finds that the sound of the train leaves the Countess far from at peace. Ooh, spooky. So those are the three stories that I was sent last year. They're still brand new. I've not read them. That's not strictly true, actually, because I did read them, but I read them online. They sent me PDFs as well. So I kept the books pristine for one lucky listener. So if you want me to send you those three ghost stories that you can read just before Christmas, they're only short. You could read them in probably less than an hour. For me, I could read one while I was on the toilet. I haven't. Don't worry about that. If you want to win them, all you got to do is email me and say, yeah, I'll have them. Or Facebook message, yeah, I'll have them. Or through the contact form on the website, yeah, I'll have them. Send that through, and then I'll put the names in a hat, and I'll pull out a name, I'll read out the name, and that's the person who's going to win those books. I thought I'd do this for Halloween. Now, they've also sent me some more books this year, so this is the ones I would have got last year, and probably sometime in the next couple of episodes, I'll do the same again with some more books. So if you don't win this time, you might win next time. So all you got to do is message me with, yeah, I'll have them. Okay? Okay. Now it's time for this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
The number one rule of the tiki bar? If you can't say something nice about someone, have another drink. It'll come to you. So I need to tell you that this report is going to be rubbish. See how well I have learned from my own segments? But really, I am chasing down another garbage chute to return to a trashy topic. This time, it started with my obsession with alternative Christmas music. As I have previously reported here, I have a collection of tiki Christmas songs, but I also seek out other non-traditional holiday tunes. I was searching that World Wide Web thing the other day when I discovered the UK charity single Boogie Round the Bins at Christmas Time by the Dancing Binmen. And my Do You Hear What I Hear antenna went straight up. What, pray tell, is a binman? Because when I watch their video, all I see are some extremely happy garbage men getting down. For you see, in the United States, we don't have a binman. Or even bins for that matter. our trash here is collected by a garbage man. But what is fascinating is how these bin men in their bins relate to the nativity in Bethlehem. The original Old English term bin began with the medieval Latin word binna, which meant basket. Then this evolved into cart, and then it came to mean a receptacle in a general sense, but most specifically, a box or a container for cattle feed, like you would find in a stable, meaning a manger or a crib. This same word, benna, in Italy, began to be used for the dung cart, and by the mid-19th century, it had become bin, meaning a receptacle for rubbish. This simple word for a container to hold waste was then informally used in Britain to describe throwing away or rejecting something, as in binned or binning. The term is still commonly used to describe a specific kind of box or other lidded container in the UK, like a toy bin or a vegetable bin. An Englishman might say, throw it in the bin, while an American is more likely to say, toss it in the garbage. And as for those bin men, well, they were originally called dustbin men because most household refuse back in the day consisted largely of ashes or dust from the fires for cooking and heating. This was later, of course, shortened to bin men as the formal title for the worker who collects rubbish from the bin outside your home and takes it away. So I don't know about you, but after this discussion, I am ready for the loony bin. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Another flawless effort there from Bob. Fantastic work. We do call them dustbin men. More bin men these days. Yeah, if the bin men bin or the bin men are coming tomorrow. Yeah, that's what we call them, bin men. Do you know, I used to work in a pub and one of the regulars, his job was a bin man. He was a nice guy, but I want to say a little bit slow, but he was just a nice guy, just an easygoing nice guy. And people used to sort of take the mick out of him about being a bin man. And one time he turned around and he goes, I'm not a bin man, I'm a refuse collection technician. And everyone just pissed themselves. I said, mate, it's probably best if you just stick to being a bin man, really. Yeah, great guy, Dave. I still see him occasionally. Good guy. Anyway, thanks again, Bob. Fantastic work. If you're not listening to the Festive Foreign Film Fans podcast, I want you to explain to me exactly why not, because it's great. Every 2 weeks it comes out and it's just a great podcast. The two of them chat about films, then they talk about the country the film came from, and then they play some music. You can't go wrong. If you love Christmas and you want to find out about some Christmas films that you've not heard of, that's the place to go. Festive Foreign Film Fans. And Bob, great work. I love you. Now let's do this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
This episode's version of A Christmas Carol is called A Christmas Carol. And it was produced by Jetlag Productions. And it says in brackets, Good Times Entertainment. And it's an animated version, another one. I've done a few that are like this. And pretty much, I think this company just did a lot of book to cartoon adaptations. And yeah, this is one of those. Like I said, I've done a lot that are very similar to this in that it's a very close version of A Christmas Carol. They leave out a lot of stuff that most versions leave out. And yeah, that's pretty much it. It's something. I'm going to go through it and pick out the highlights. So it starts off, right? And there's some kids in the street and they're throwing snowballs. And then it cuts to some other kids and they're building a snowman. And then it cuts to a bunch of carol singers walking through the street. Okay, remember that, kids. Then we go in and we see Scrooge. And Scrooge, he's not that bad looking, actually. He's got a bit of a pointy nose, but he's still got a full head of dark brown hair. So he's not gone grey and he's not gone bald. Well done, Scrooge. Holding on to his youth there. We see Cratchit. And I've got to say, this is probably the chubbiest Cratchit I've ever seen. He's not particularly round-faced, but he's got quite a big belly on him. Yeah, which I thought was interesting, because later on we see that he's got a family of like 6 or 7 kids, I lost count, and he's got to feed all them and his own big belly on his salary, and he seems to be doing a pretty good job of it. In comes Fred and the dialogue of their conversation, and this is like it throughout the book. It's so close, in some places it's exactly taken from the book, and then in other cases they change it just a little bit. And they don't need to change it, I don't think, but that's what they chose to do. This is one bit that stood out to me. At one point he says this.
Oh, come now, Uncle, don't be cross with me.
And then a little bit later in the conversation, he says this.
Don't be angry, Uncle.
But pretty much his job is just to tell his uncle not to be angry. I think I talked about this a while ago. When my wife's getting angry at me, for whatever reason, I'll turn to her and say, don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow. And that always smooths things over perfectly. When Fred does his speech about, I have always found Christmas to be a good time, a happy time, whatever, Cratchit claps at the end of that speech. He always does, right? In most versions and in the book and that. In this one, he spills his ink and falls out of his chair. And it's like, what was that? What was that? A bit of comedy for us, was it? Because there ain't many other bits like that in the whole cartoon. It's like they've tried to set this up as a humorous version and then given us no more humour. At all, it seems. Fred leaves, and in comes the portly gentleman. That's right, the portly gentleman. Not men. There's only one of him. Yeah, I think that might be the first time I've ever seen that. So that was quite a letdown. I felt like I've been ripped off to the tune of One Portly Gentleman. Anyway, it's interesting in that his talk, normally the portly gentleman comes and says, at this time of year. Well, this one is a lot more common, can I say? He's got more of a Cockney accent. Let me play at it what he says.
I represent a group of businessmen who take up a collection for the poor at Christmas time. As you know, there are thousands of needy people in want of common comforts.
Yeah, there you go. Do you see what I mean? Yeah, not a big deal. Something though, isn't it? And then Scrooge is saying, like, you know, are there no prisons? Are there no... What is it? Well, have a listen.
And the workshops are in operation?
Yeah, are there no workshops? Are there no workshops? Like Santa's workshop? Is there no Santa's workshop? It's a workhouse, Scrooge. And what's funny is, later on, when he's having a go at the portly gentleman, he calls it a workhouse. So goodness knows why he called it a workshop, just that one time. Then, to show the passing of time, there is an exact repeat of two parts of the scene we saw earlier. So we see the children building a snowman, and then we see the carol singers marching through the street. Yeah. Have we gone back in time? Nope, we're just using old footage. Then it's time for Cratchit to go. Then we see Scrooge walking home, and he does that. And it's a few shots of him walking home. It's not just like Scrooge leaving and then turn up at his house. It's like down this street, round the corner. Now he's home again. And Marley's face appears in the door knocker. That's okay. What is cool is when he comes in, he actually does check behind the door, because you don't always get that bit. And I like the fact that, you know, they showed him checking behind the door to check if Marley was actually stood there poking his head through a hole. Obviously not. And then he goes up the stairs. As he's going up the stairs, they've sort of added moaning noises as he goes up, which maybe is a nod to the bit about he can see a hearse going up the stairs ahead of him in the book. Then, when he's sitting down to eat his tea, we see Marley's face in the fireplace. And I was impressed with that, because you do not see that that often. It does seem, I say that a lot though, and we do actually see it more than I originally remembered from a lot of versions. But yeah, there it was. I was happy to see that. Then Marley turns up, and there's a lot of, like, do you remember the real Ghostbusters, the cartoon, the like, sort of electricity effects you'd have around the ghosts and stuff like that? A lot of, like, lightning. There's a lot of that in this, especially when Marley turns up. We see some more later with some of the ghosts, but this is particularly, there's a lot of it. It's aged a bit, if you ask me. And Marley looks decent. And one thing I did like is it does look like, because in the book it explains that he's always in motion. It looks like his hair's always in motion. And in this one they did do that. They made it look like his hair's constantly moving. I thought that was good. And his clothes slightly as well. And his coattails are always hanging up his back. They're right up his back, though. It's like someone's just gone up behind him and just lifted him up, and they're up to his shoulders. And they're always up there. They don't sort of float down again. They're always up there. We don't get the line, you know, the one about there's more of gravy than of grave about you, which is sorely missed. And then Marley says this.
You will be haunted by three spirits tonight. Expect the first spirit to call when the clock tolls one. The next will come at the stroke of 2 o'clock, and the third at 3.
And that annoyed me a little bit, but not massively. Now, here's the thing. I've talked about this loads of times before. Now, any adaptation is going to leave out some of the bits in the book. Marley says, expect the first ghost on the first night, the second ghost on the second night, third on the third night. Okay, that's the deal. That's what he says. Then in the book, if you read it, so much happens. He goes to so many different places, especially when he's with the Ghost of Christmas Present. They talk about all the different places he goes. But at the same time, in the Ghost of Christmas Past, it's not like he just spends 2 minutes at Fezziwig's party. He's pretty much there the whole evening with Fezziwig's party. When he sees himself at school, he turns up and he walks all the way from where they start off to the school, and then he spends a lot of time there in the school. Then, obviously, we see him with Belle, and then we see the scene with Belle in the future. And the whole point is that this could be spread out over like a whole day. And with the Ghost of Christmas Present, he goes to lots and lots of different places that in most versions are never even touched upon. So again, that could be a whole day. And maybe with the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, it's not such a long time scale. But still, you know, we're told that it happens over 3 nights. In this one, no, we're doing it all in 1 night. Not only that, we're doing it in 3 hours. That's it. So it didn't really annoy me, because I sort of thought, well, this is a short version. They're sort of making it, they dumb it down a bit. They do dumb it down a bit. You know, like the reason they changed the dialogue is purely to dumb it down and make it easier for people to understand. So I sort of accept it, but I'm not happy about it. Right, can we move on from that? At no point does Marley explain why he's fettered, and it's because he should have been a good person and now he's forced to roam the world, which would be fine, but then we see the spirits in the street. Now, here's the thing. You don't see Marley with them. You just see all these spirits in the street. They play a song in the background. It's like one of only 2 songs in the whole thing. I'll play a little bit of the song for you. It's terrible.
Look into your life and let the spirit guide you. It's not too late to recommend and put the past behind.
We see all these spirits in the street and they're all howling and moaning. There's no poor woman there that's destitute and they're all there going, oh, if only I could help you. They're just moaning in the street. That's what they do with their time now, just moaning in the street and then floating up in the air. Yeah, wasn't a massive fan of that. And another thing I wasn't a massive fan of, most of them have got their coattails all the way up their back as well. Okay, forget it. So Scrooge goes to bed at 1 o'clock. The Ghost of Christmas Past turns up. The Ghost of Christmas Past is very short. He's a little old man. Right? He's very short, though. He's like lower than waist height on Scrooge. Looks a little bit, you know, do you remember Dungeon Master from the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon? Looks a little bit like that, but his sort of features are a bit more pointy, and he's got a full head of white hair, but it is long white hair, like Dungeon Master, and a remarkably deep voice for one so small. Have a listen to this.
I am the Ghost of Christmas Past.
Now, Scrooge doesn't want to go anywhere, so the Ghost of Christmas Past starts to levitate Scrooge up in his bed, and he's floating there going, oh, what's going on? And then they sort of fly off to the past, and they're in the street. And I found this interesting, because Scrooge is like naming all the boys, right? But he's saying their surnames as well. And it made me think, yeah, I wonder if like those are actual people that the writer knew, or maybe the guy playing Scrooge knew. It sort of reminded me of, like, you know, when you get the Easter eggs in, often in superhero films, where they'll sort of say something offhand and it turns out that, you know, they've used the name of a famous writer of the comic that the cartoons, but who cares anyway? Then Scrooge is like, oh, I want to stay here, and they're like, no. So the ghost wraps him up in mist and he gets floated along, and then they're surfing along the snow as well, which I don't know. And then we see the young Scrooge in the school, and we just see him there with his head down on the desk just crying his eyes out, which is a bit sad. Nothing about him reading books and being a solitary boy, it's just he spent Christmas crying. really. Then time passes and he's grown up a bit, and in comes Fan. And yeah, they did a pretty good job with that scene. The funny thing is though, like, Fan comes in, Scrooge goes in, he's like, oh, there's my sister. And the ghost is like, yeah, she's just a shadow, you can't hug her. And Scrooge runs up to hug her, but they obviously couldn't do the animation of them passing through each other, so he just sort of runs next to her as if he's like running towards her, and she's running just slightly to the left of him, and they run past each other. Like, they're both very short-sighted or something, I don't know. But like I said, other than that, that's a pretty decent scene. Then we go to Fezziwigs, and it sort of shows everyone having a lot of fun and dancing, but there's a lot of hip thrusting going on. A lot of hip thrusting. Yeah. That's mainly the first scene of the dancing, because then you see some more dancing, and there's one of the guys who's got some crazy moves. And this is said.
Something must be wrong here.
What could possibly be wrong?
The time of day. It's broad daylight, long before closing, yet there's a party going on.
Of course there's a party. Old Fezziwig always closed the warehouse early on Christmas Eve so he can have a party for his employees.
Yeah, it closes early. Now, in the book, they make a real big thing of it actually being the end of the work day, and then they put the shutters up and then they get everything ready for the party that evening. Not closing early. No, none of that. So I don't know why they chose to do it that way. That's fine. Then we see Scrooge with his friend, and anyone who reads the book would know that the chap Fred worked with, a Fezziwig, was called Dick. But in this, his name is Richard. Yeah, were they worried they were going to offend people by saying Dick? Are you offended if I say Dick? Right. Anyway, that's fine, you know, everyone's having a great time at Fezziwig's party. It pretty much follows the book with that bit. They do okay with that. Then we see Belle, and again, that's another serviceable job. You know, they've changed the wording a bit, but the sentiments are there. Yeah, and Scrooge is like, oh, show me no more. Then Scrooge wakes up in bed, and the clock strikes two. And this is interesting, right? So you've got his door, and Scrooge is like sitting in bed, like, oh, I'm going to stay here. And like an arm comes, a big hairy arm comes under the door and is like beckoning, like, come in here. And Scrooge's like, oh, fair enough. I think they use some more of that lightning to get him to go through the door. Scrooge goes through the door. He's not in the next room. Do you know where he is? In like a huge garden. Now, in the book, it does say it's like a veritable grove. And I don't know if that's what they're doing, or if it's sort of meant to look a bit like the Garden of Eden. I'm not sure. I don't know. And the Ghost of Christmas Present is there, and he looks the part. Apart from his robe, it's like a bluey, purpley colour. I've never seen it that colour before. It's always been either red or green. So, I don't know. I'm not that bothered about it, but that was the colour they went with. Then the spirit takes him into town, and we see the snowball fight from earlier. Do you remember the bit I said at the very start of the cartoon? It was the snowball fight, snowman building, and the carol singers, and then they reused the snowman building and the carol singers. Well, now they've reused the snowball fight again, so waste not, want not. And Scrooge mentions that this is like a poor neighbourhood. Don't look that poor, you know, but if that's how you feel, Scrooge. And they go into this house, they just walk through the walls. They do a lot of walking through walls in this, and it's into Fred's house. And it doesn't say that it's his nephew Fred, and none of the guests are there yet. It's literally just Fred and his wife decorating. That's it, doing the tree and stuff. And hanging a wreath from the ceiling, which I thought was interesting. Literally, like a wreath you'd put on your door, they're hanging it from the ceiling. Fine, I'm not going to argue. It's your house. Decorate how you please. But we don't know that that's Fred. And later on, I thought, was that Fred we saw earlier? Because there's nothing like the scene in the book. We all know the scene in the book where they're playing a game and the butt of the joke is Scrooge. This time, it's just them two. No guests, no nothing, and no words either. So we don't know if it's... Well, you've got to recognise that it was Fred from earlier. Anyway, then we go to the Cratchit's house. And do you know what? I should have said this earlier, but at this point, I want to point out that the style of this cartoon has got quite an anime feel to it. It really has. And particularly with the female characters, the girls and the ladies, they all have much more of an anime look to them. And the scene in the Cratchits follows the book pretty well, actually. And all the kids are there having fun. And the Ghost of Christmas Present says this.
Have you ever seen such merriment?
No. No, I have not.
Right, and Scrooge says no. Yeah? You've just been at Fezziwig's party, mate. They were all thrusting their hips, and you were going on about how great it was, and there was some guy doing some really interesting, crazy dancing. How's that less merry than this? Anyway, don't want to kick up a fuss, because the next bit's brilliant. because he says this.
And now, Master Peter Cratchit, take your brothers and fetch the Christmas goose from the bakery.
Yeah, and I think that may well be only the second, possibly even the first time that they've said that the goose is actually coming from the baker's. And we talked about this in a previous episode. I'm not going to go into it in depth, but the point is, in the book, it explains that their goose is being cooked at the baker's because most houses didn't have an oven. Yeah, and we see that because someone's cooking potatoes over the open fire, and there's no space to cook a duck over that. Right, Bob Cratchit comes back. He's walking down the street with Tiny Tim on his shoulders. His belly looks at his biggest at this point. Really bad shot of him, yeah. Then they have their dinner. We don't see the Christmas pudding, which is a bit of a shame, but they all gather around the fireplace for the toast with Scrooge. And sometimes you see that, most times you don't. So I thought it was quite nice that it was around the fireplace rather than at the table. So good work on that one. And that's the end of the Ghost of Christmas Presents bit. Then Scrooge sees the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. And it does call him the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Good work on that. And this Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, it just looks like a bloke in a robe, but you can't see his face. Because he walks just like a bloke. He's walking along. You see his feet at one point. He's wearing shoes. Or strange sort of curled up slippers. But, you know, he's just walking along like a normal bloke. It doesn't look that otherworldly. It looks like a bloke in a robe. We see the two men in the street. And again, it's very similar to the dialogue in the book, but not identical. Then we go and see old Joe. And again, exactly the same. The dialogue, the same as the book at some points. Slightly different at other points. Then it says this.
Surely someone in this city must mourn for this man. Someone must have had their lives touched by his passing.
Now that line should lead, and I got a bit excited actually, that should lead us to the couple who are happy that Scrooge has died because they owe him money and they couldn't pay the debt. But you know, when someone else takes on their debt, they'll be able to pay it by then. But it doesn't take us to that scene, sadly. It takes us to the Cratchits, and that's pretty much the same as in the book. You know, they're all upset because Tiny Tim's carked it. Then we go to the graveyard. Scrooge's like, oh, is it my grave? Of course it's your grave. Of course they were talking about you. You knew this in your heart. Scrooge wakes up. He's all happy. Happy as a schoolboy. Merry as a drunken man. I don't know. And he shouts out to the boy in the street. The dialogue is exactly the same as the book until it gets to Walker. Does he say Walker?
Ha ha! Some joke!
Yeah, no, he doesn't say Walker. Bit upset about that. Then it shows us the Cratchits with the turkey. You don't always get that because it's not in the book. But in this one, we got to see the Cratchits discussing who sent them the turkey. Then we see the portly gentleman in the street. Same as normal, you know. And then he goes to Fred's. That's quite an interesting bit. Because when he turns up at Fred's, he sort of knocks on the door and the door opens instantly. It's like Fred's just standing behind his door waiting for people to knock. Knock, knock, knock. Oh, hello. Yeah, like that. That's a nice scene. You know, he goes in, he says, apologises for being a dick, and everyone's like, oh, no, come and join the fun. It's going to be great. And then we get the scene with Bob Cratchit, his first day back at work, and Scrooge is like, I'm not going to stand for this anymore. I'm going to raise your salary, and it's all glorious. And then the very, very final scene is this crappy musical number, and I'll play a little bit. And while that's going on, Scrooge is sort of like there with the Cratchits and they're all very happy in the street. And that's pretty much it. So if you want to watch it, you can if you want to. You know, I'm trying to cover every episode eventually, so I had to watch it. But there are similar versions that are better, that are so close, you might as well not bother watching this one, if that makes sense. One thing I want to say though, right? I've got this book called A Christmas Carol and its adaptations, and it mentions nearly every version of A Christmas Carol up to about 1998, and this is what it says, right? Yet another lifeless limited animation bore fest. That's it, yeah. But then it says, right, this is quite interesting. This one was released direct to the home video market, with its tape packaging proudly proclaiming it to be the version children love. Since no one could have seen this version before unwrapping the tape, one wonders how it was determined that children love it. Nevertheless, this advertisement seems to suggest that the carol is still perceived as a hot commercial property and that there is considerable competition among the various carols in the Christmas marketplace. There you go. So yeah, I'll leave you with that. It's the version that children love. Now let's do this. Boys and girls, I don't make a massive thing about Halloween on the podcast because this is a Christmas podcast. However, this episode's recommendation is the Happy Halloween podcast from friend of the show, Tony Dixon. Now, some of you may remember that last year in the build-up to Christmas, Tony sent me through a spooky ghost story that he read out, and he had a great way of reading. I really loved it. It was very atmospheric. Tony has his own podcast. Like I said, it's called the Happy Halloween podcast, and I'm going to read out the blurb for you. The Happy Halloween podcast is a spooky and fun-filled journey through the world of Halloween. Join Tony as he explores the history, legends and myths surrounding this haunting holiday. From creepy ghost stories to fascinating traditions, each episode is packed with thrills and chills that are sure to send shivers down your spine. So sit back and relax and get ready for a wild ride through the darkness of Halloween with the Happy Halloween podcast. There you go. And the episodes are about 20 minutes long and you'll learn a lot about Halloween. So check it out wherever you get your podcasts, as they say in the business. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a massive thank you to my mate Bob again, as ever, for doing such great work for the show. If you want to get in touch, you know what to do. Drop me an email at totalchristmas@gmail.com or check out the website totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love ya. Merry, happy Christmas.
Hey, it's getting late, and I've got these letters to deliver. And you better be getting home, too. And remember, behave yourselves, because Santa can still look into his magic snowball and see just what you're up to. And now that you know all about him, you can be darn sure that come snow or high water,
Santa Claus is coming to town.